Hola, mi gente. The moment you've been waiting for is finally here. My brand new book, Financially Lit, is officially out. And I can't wait for you to get your copy. Inside this book, I'm bringing you culturally relevant and relatable personal finance advice that will allow you to finally feel seen, heard, and understood. Whether it's the guilt you feel from being the first person to make it while members of your family are still struggling, or the way that financial trauma manifests itself in negative and limiting beliefs around money, Financially Lit is here to guide you through it all. Just a few years ago, it was almost impossible to find personal finance books written for first-generation wealth-building Latinas. We have been forced to navigate the complicated world of money with a bunch of money books written by old white dudes who don't understand what it's like for us first-gen kids. But that stops right here, right now. Inside Financially Lit, you will learn how to set boundaries with your familia, with your dinero, create and pass on generational wealth, diversify and increase your income, protect yourself from financial abuse, navigate the complicated relationship between amor and dinero, invest like a white dude or better, and so much more. You can get your hard copy and audiobook version of Financially Lit at financiallylitbook.com, and make sure to join our email list so you can find out when I'm stopping in a city near you for the Financially Lit book tour. See you soon.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Can you tell me about that moment when you first realized, oh shit, like we're actually going to be successful at this?
It was when I had to ask our business bank to increase our deposit amount because the check was larger than their allowed deposit amount.
Do you want to share that number?
It was $80,000.
Okay, so you got $80,000 for a single contract?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Okay. Goosebumps. All right. Tell me more.
It was that. And it was like that moment of like, wait, I'm calling a business bank to be like, can you increase this? Because I need to deposit a check for $80,000. And then being like, oh yeah, we could do that. And like how it was so quick on their end that it was like no big deal. But for me, I'm like, wow, this is crazy. And to like do work that we're really excited about, and for people not to even like bat an eye around like, yeah, we need this, here you go. And it was just like that moment where I'm like, you know, we could do this.
You're listening to Yo Quiero Dinero, a personal finance podcast for the modern Latina. I'm your host, Janice Torres, award-winning Latina personal finance expert. I didn't always have my financial shit together, but when I started looking for POC-friendly personal finance podcasts, I couldn't find any. And so Yo Quiero Dinero was born. On this show, I'll show you how to make dinero, how to keep your dinero, and most importantly, how to make it grow. Each week, I'm connecting you with the most brilliant minds in the world of money and business, so you can learn about investing, entrepreneurship, and building wealth. The best part? I'm dishing up all this knowledge with a sassy side of sazón. So if you're ready to be poderosa with your dinero, you've come to the right place. Let's dive in. Before we hop into today's conversation, I want to remind you to follow us on social. If you're loving this podcast and you want more community, you want to find out more about our events and all the stuff that we have going on behind the scenes, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, and everywhere else you love to hang out on the internet. If you're loving this podcast, please take a moment to leave us a review if you listen to us on Apple. It's the easiest way to share our podcast with people that you know and love, and it helps us get discovered by amazing listeners like you. So take a moment, leave us a review, share us with your friends and family, subscribe so that you never miss an episode, and make sure to check out our blog, YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com, where you can sign up for our email list and you'll never miss an episode. Plus, you get exclusive invitations to our live events, special discounts for our digital courses, and as always, our best personal finance tips and advice to help you be poderosa with your dinero. Thanks for listening. Now, let's get into the episode. All right, y'all, we are coming to you with another fabulous episode. I mean, let's be honest, all the episodes on Yo Quiero Dinero are fucking fabulous. But I have a particular affinity for the ones that feature real life stories
from real life students. And we have Elin. But just for some context, like after doing this show for now 6 seasons, I realized there's so many incredible stories right here in our ecosystem, right here in our community that need to be highlighted, because there's so many entrepreneurship stories on the internet, on social media. And I find a lot of it is triggering, because a lot of it is you're watching the 10-year version of someone and comparing yourself to like year one, year two, year three. You know, I didn't make any money for 3 years in business before I even started to crack the code. And so I feel like we need to come back to reality when it comes to understanding entrepreneurship, what the journey is like, understanding the good, the bad, and the ugly. And who better than the actual students that go through my freaking classes, right? I have my side hustle course. I have my blogging course. These are courses that are specifically targeted to people who've never done this before. And I think those stories are the ones that I find the most inspiring, because you're watching people build from the beginning. And that's why I've invited these incredible people to be here today. Elin, tell us who you are and what you do.
Yes, thank you so much. So I would define myself as an educator. I've been in the education system for over 18 years. And throughout that time and the frustration with just the system that the education system is, decided to start a business. And I am now what I call a school leader coach and consultant, and really work with the school leaders, the educational leaders that want to do the real work and want to disrupt the status quo. And within that time frame as well, my friend and I from high school, both educators, started a podcast so that we can uplift the voices of educators that just do not get the platform to talk about what it means to transform schools and to be in a system that oftentimes wants to suppress those that are trying to make real change. And I'm originally from Oakland, California, and I think a lot of my own experiences through the public school system really informed the way that I wanted to show up as an educator, and now how I show up as a school leader coach. It also helps that I have, you know, little one that's about to enter the public school system as well. And so not only do I think about students that look like me and darker than me, like our Black and brown students, but I also think about, you know, what is my kid going to enter and how will they be received when entering a system that oftentimes likes to look the other way or put people in boxes or labels. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot more. I'm a first generation college student. I'm the first in the family to receive not only one, but two masters. And I have my doctorate in educational leadership. So I also like to prove people wrong when trying to say, what do you know? Like, well, I spent a lot of time and money making sure that I can prove to you that not only do I know, I have the receipts to prove it. And so I am often, you know, one that surprises people, because I would define myself as being more of the quiet person. But that's through the observation that I really can speak up and prove what I'm seeing in the rooms that need to be heard, like when I need to be heard and when I need to say those things. So that's what I would say.
She's a professional mic dropper. That's what I got from that whole introduction. That's fucking badass. I'm like, she's like, master's, doctorate, bitch, don't question me. I know what I'm talking about. And you know, I think it's so important for us to embrace how much we actually know, right? Like, we tend to discredit ourselves. I think especially as like first gen, if people of color, there's this idea that like, don't speak up, don't make people feel intimidated. And it's just like, first of all, if you don't speak up as a business owner, you're not paying your bills. Because if nobody knows what you're doing and what you have to stand for and what you have to say, nobody's going to support you. So I think part of what I love about the whole journey of entrepreneurship is like all the personal development that happens. Like, you have to own your story. You have to get very fucking comfortable talking about that shit all the time. That's my rant on that. Okay. So I want to do like the backstory. I want to backtrack, right? Because every founder has their origin story. Every founder has their like moment where they identify there's a problem here in the world and I am going to be the one to fix it. And so Elin, take us back to that moment for you where you were just like, I am so sick and tired of the shit that I'm seeing and I need to show up in a different way. And that's going to require me to put myself out there as an entrepreneur.
Wow. I mean, that can go all the way back into my own K-12 experience. But I would say what got me into education was this moment in time when I was a senior in high school. And I remember it like it was yesterday. And my high school counselor was not giving me any college counseling or any type of support in applying straight to college. Mind you, I went to a public high school in Oakland, California, I'm Latina. And there was just a lot of gatekeeping that was happening in counseling, you know, still to this day, but not as much. But then it was more just like, yeah, I don't need to waste my time on giving you information to fill out a college application or ask you what your goals are. You know, the question that was asked to me was, what are you going to do for work when you graduate? And I was raised in a household where college wasn't an option. It was, you are going to college. It's just a matter of where. That was instilled in me at a very, very young age. And so it was very confusing and upsetting to me. If it wasn't for the college outreach counselor that was right next door, if it wasn't for her overhearing the conversation and pulling me in and saying, yo, I'm going to help you. You want to go to college? Let me just walk you through a couple steps. You're not in my program, but that's messed up. And it was that moment where I said, I don't want any students that identify differently than the majority to ever feel like they had no options or were not given the information to really think through what their options are. So that's what led me to becoming a school counselor. I spent several years doing that. And again, feeling like I wasn't able to do enough. There were barriers, there were administrators, there were lots of people saying what we couldn't do and didn't want to try to problem solve things that we could do. So that's when I'm like, okay, I'm going to become an administrator. So I went back to school, got that second master's to become a school administrator. And I went back to the high school that I graduated from to become an assistant principal. And at that time, they had removed all of the school counselors because of problematic complaints. And so it was happening for many, many years. So I entered a high school as an administrator with no counseling department. I was able to rebuild that counseling department in a way that was really meant to support our students of color with the options that they have. And through that, like being a school administrator for 5 years, it was hard work. It's very hard work. I don't think people really understand how hard it is to be an educator and how hard it is to move systems. So at that time, realizing like I am a young administrator of color and I'm not receiving the support that I need, I was burning out. I was an administrator for 5 years and I burnt out fast. I was really working long hours, was trying to push different systems through, really questioning a lot, not getting a lot of fans, but at the same time, supporters. And at that point, it was through conversations with one of my, you know, really good friends that I went to high school with. We both went to college together. We both worked at that high school together because that's the high school we went to. We were always having like those happy hour conversations, always kind of confiding in one another, venting to one another, leaning on one another. And it wasn't until we left that high school and said, we're not doing this anymore. We're going to go to other high schools to be administrators, that people kept asking us for help. They kept calling us saying like, hey, how'd you do this? Or, hey, can you walk us through that? Or like, we really appreciated the way you approached this. We need to understand that a little bit better because we want to keep doing it here. And both of us were like, wait a minute, we're helping y'all for free? Like, that's what we spent really long hours and a lot of our brain power.
And a lot of money, because all those damn degrees, okay?
Right. I don't think we equate that, right? And so I was like, you know, her and I were like, dude, we need to like start a business. So we filed an LLC, you know, over 5 years ago, kind of started to figure things out. We started first with like consulting and doing some kind of consulting work here and there with schools we used to work with. But it honestly wasn't until I started listening to your podcast, Janice, Yo Quiero Dinero, that I'm like, man, I want to start a podcast. Because quite honestly, like I was searching personal finance, Latinas, like trying to find that I like, you know, someone I can identify with, because I really was starting from scratch. I didn't know. And I wanted to kind of connect. So it was like, man, and through that, I'm like, I want to start a podcast because I don't find anything for educators like that. So I started with the podcast and her and I would record and have those conversations that we were having naturally and bring on people that we wanted people to learn from. And it was through that, through your courses and really trying to figure out like, what am I actually trying to do? Do I want to consult people on how to do things or do I want to like really foster and establish leadership styles and empower leaders to continue doing transformational work? And that's when we did a pivot and said, yeah, we'll do some consulting here and there because we're good at some things, but we really wanted to work with school leaders and coach them in their leadership so that they feel like they're empowered to push back on those things that we're often told not to. And we've been doing that for a few years and it's, I'm quite proud and impressed of how much we've actually been able to make, but not so much like, yes, it's the money, but at the same time, just the amount of districts that we've been able to get into and the leaders that we've been able to impact, because that means there's several schools and hundreds and thousands of students that are being impacted by the work that we're doing. So that's kind of where it started. It was frustration.
Yeah.
Frustration and passion that really started, you know, this business of us founding Empower Educational Consulting.
Okay. So you discover the podcast, you discover the program. What is it specifically about my stuff that like made you want to work with me? Because obviously I'm not the only person who's out here like doing this stuff. What is it about you that resonated with like what we're building here?
You always kept it real. I mean, I've like, you know, I've seen enough. I've been on like social media enough. I also think that I was a point where I didn't want to be filled with the fluff or kind of like get blown smoke, if that makes sense. Like I really wanted someone that was just gonna like really tell me in that moment, like the steps that I needed to take. Cause I was like, I need to kind of jump through some steps. Like I know, you know, I have an idea, like I'm already in this business, but I'm not really sure what to do with it. We were in the red at that time. And like, we're like, I was ready to really like call it quits. And for you, like, it was just, it felt real. I felt like you were not really, you know, BSing at all. And you just like were sharing your own experience that also helped me find it relatable. And so you were modeling. And I think that's like, as an educator, that's important because we often say we have to model things for our students, not just tell them, model things. And you were teaching everything and modeling what it was like to put these things in place. Even like the basics of like different systems to use with your podcast recording and also making it super easy. We're like, cause I go into like decision fatigue or I'm like constantly like, oh, let me research this first. You're like, just use it. Like it's free. You can switch it later. Just get it started. And I think that is what really resonated with me because I needed something like that. And I just appreciated your honesty and I appreciated you, your authenticity, to be quite honest.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I try to approach the way that I teach in the way that I would want to be taught. I was the type of student where like I was hella engaged in a topic if I was genuinely, if I felt like I could be competent in it. But if I didn't feel like I was getting the resources and the tools, like calculus for me, physics, all those courses, it was just like, they're just spitting a bunch of shit at me, but it's like, you're not making it relatable. You're not making it relevant to my life. Like, and it was very hard for me to learn. And so I try to really break things down in a way that's like, let's get all the bullshit, all the jargon, all the unnecessary stuff out of the way and just like, start at the basics, right? And so you can have people that are telling you, hey, start an LLC, do all this stuff. I'm just like, can you just like pick something you want to do and tell people about it and ask them to pay you and like start there? Because you're spending all this money to do all this upfront bullshit that really doesn't matter, that really does not test out your theory. It's like, you're just spending a lot of time wasting time. Right. We talk about like the decision fatigue of like, oh, but what are my brand colors going to be? Or what's the logo? Or what's the business name? Or what kind of credit card should I get? Or what kind of bank? It's like, just fucking pick something. Like we're allowed to evolve in our business journey the same way we're allowed to evolve as a human. And the more that you know, the more you can pivot and rebrand and do all those things. But if you never get started, you never get started. Okay, so I want to talk about how you decided what your offer was going to be, because that's one of the biggest decisions that people have to make in their business. And I think there's a lot of anxiety of like, if you don't get it right the first time, that you've somehow fucked up. And I like to remind people that I have had many lives as an entrepreneur. Some of them worked out great. Some of them were trash, but you don't know until you try. So can you kind of walk us through what that iteration process was for you to figure out what the final offer would be?
Yeah, we started off with consulting because that's what people were asking us for, right? They wanted help with certain tasks and responsibilities that any administrator would have to do. We just happened to be really good at the master schedule, which is something that all schools need and that many administrators actually don't know how to do. And so we kind of tapped into that expertise and people were asking for us. So like, okay, let's do that. This was prior to 2020 when people were not talking about equity as much as they are now. And we were really promoting an equity focused master schedule process, and we still do. But people, like, I remember us like sending cold emails and trying to call and like explaining what an equity master schedule is. And nobody was responding. Like, I remember the responses we got was like, please take me off of your mailing list. And I'm like, if only they knew this wasn't even a mailing list. Like, we're literally looking at district websites, getting email addresses and sending email after email after email. And, you know, it was hard because like no one, I get it, like, I think now people would probably be like responding saying like, tell me more about this equity focused master schedule. In fact, they do. So now like that is definitely still something that we do. But it was through that process of like, man, like no one understands this. And what, like, do they get us? Like, is it just because we're, you know, two women of color, like they're not used to us being the consultants that are reaching out. And so we're like, maybe this isn't good. Like, what should we do? And we're just like kind of like scratching our heads. We took a bit of a break. And that was when we came back with the podcast. It was like shortly after the murder of George Floyd, where we're just like, we cannot stay quiet anymore. Like, we have a lot to say. And we connected a lot of what was happening to what happened in our schools and how both, you know, Christina and I, my business partner, we were just like, this is like what's happening all the time in our schools. The racism, the systemic racism, all of the inequities, everything that we're talking about that people are protesting about happens in our schools every day. So that's what inspired us to be like, no, we're going to keep doing this. We're going to figure it out. You know, let's talk about it on a podcast. We started hosting like free webinars or like free spaces for educators to talk about what was happening and how we can influence our students and talk to our students about current events and social justice issues. And it was through that we're like, okay, what would we have wanted when we were administrators during this time? And the one thing that we kept noticing that both she and I did not get, or if we did get, and it was never like relevant. So we both didn't get coaching. Neither one of us, as you know, younger school administrators, newer to the field, were never received coach. I never received coaching. I believe Christina received coaching, but it was from a white male. She had a really hard time connecting. It was just not relevant to her. And so it kind of felt like a waste of her time. And for me, I'm like, I never got it. Like, I had to seek it out. And so it was through that time of like having those really deep conversations, listening to our network of educators, talking about how hard things have been and how they've needed people that look like them or thought like them to work through things as simple as a tardy policy. Because again, we're interrogating all of the systems that represent what we're seeing on the streets and saying like, is this actually helping or hurting? And so it was through that where like, we're like, yeah, I think we should do that. And we received a lot of calls for the coaching than the consulting. Because I think at that point, burnout was real. And I think people were starting to ask, how do we keep our good educators employed and in our schools? And so we started getting a lot more traction with coaching. And we felt like it was addressing what it is that we wanted. We didn't want to just help a school with one thing. We wanted to help school leaders so that they can continue to develop and impacting schools for years forward. So it was through like the podcast and the conversations where we started realizing, I think, you know, school administrators need support and coaching is the way to do that.
You know, I think you touched on something that's really important when folks are thinking about selling their first offer. I think some people can think like, let me just build the thing and then find people to sell the thing to, versus you discovering that I need to know who to help first. Because when I know who to help, then I can build the thing that they need help with. And that comes from conversations. That comes from you putting yourself out there as a thought leader and sharing your values, your mission statement, the work that you do, what you care about. That is naturally going to attract a certain community. And then once you've built up that community, that's when it makes sense for you to have something to offer. So when people ask me, should I like do the product first and then find the people to sell it to, or find the people, build a community and then build a product, I'm always going to pick option two, because there's something about building that trust with folks and creating that space where folks are already invested in you and your story that makes it a lot easier to then make that conversion into a paid customer. So I want to talk about how you actually make money. So how did you decide how to structure your program? And are you getting like contracts with school systems? Are you getting contracts with like individuals? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's still being figured out. And right now what we've been doing is like doing a lot of custom offers. And that's the thing that I think was one of the challenges for us is going into this space is that there's a lot of red tape. And it's not something that we see often where an educator is going to, you know, pay out of their pocket.
Especially for development for their career, right? That's like something you would think that a job would pay for.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, and that's I think what we started to carry forward and like making public is like, your school has money to pay mm-hmm. for this.
They sure do.
And so we've had mostly districts pay for our services, and it works either way. The districts, you know, will either contract with us and say like, we have this many new administrators we want you to work with. And then we meet with them and, you know, figure out a plan. Or we have a school administrator that knows us or like has heard of us, wants to work with us. Then they talk through us and then they get their district on board and we send all the paperwork to the district. And so it's been a mix. And, you know, something that you've said that really like has stuck with me and has really kind of helped me through this process of like not just building the product, but building the community. It's like, the community doesn't also have to just be on social media. Like we have a huge community, a network of educators that have worked with us, that know what we can do. And so we've been like really trying to nurture the network we have and staying in touch with people and checking in with our fellow colleagues and sending those emails out. And that's where we've gotten a bulk of our clients is through just people who know us. And so I think it can go either way, but like we're at a point now where we're thinking about packages, but really we've, you know, stuck to the real customized packages. Like, what is it that you need? What are some of the barriers you're facing to challenges? And then together, you know, Christina and I figure out like, what do we think would best serve the administrator, the educator, and then come up with a proposal. That's kind of how we've been doing it.
Can you walk us through a little bit of your thought process through pricing too? Because people have no idea like how to convert this whole, like I make X amount of money per hour at a job. Like what does that translate to as an entrepreneur?
That was hard. Again, we're educators. We don't get paid well. We're nonprofits in that sense as an educator, but this is a business for profit. So it was like, that was a challenge. And honestly, like we coach school leaders and we believe everyone needs coaches. So we also showed up in that same way and we received business coaching. So two different coaches, Kat being one of them, our first one that really challenged our thinking when it came to our worth and pricing appropriately. And then our second coach, Deidre, who was a former educator that was like, you know that they have money. So like, stop pretending like you have to give it this out for free. We've done that for so long. And so I think through that process, we kind of like looked at not only what school districts pay like other consultants, like we kind of did some of that market research because that's all public information of what districts are paying outside consultants. We were looking through that. And then also what our district would pay us for per diem work, like how much would they pay us per hour? And then we added a little bit more to it because we knew that we were bringing a whole new fresh perspective. There are not very many coaches and consultants that are women of color that have recent experience. We're not retired because that's often what happens. Retired educators come back and do the coaching or the consulting. We're not. We're still in it. And so we were able to really price ourselves where we felt it was worth, you know, us. Because in the beginning, it was a side hustle, right? And it still kind of is in some ways. And we're like, we're using our free time for this. Like, it has to be worth it. So really pricing our worth. And some districts are like, you all are too expensive. And we're like, okay, that's fine. You know, we can work within a certain budget and give you way less, or we're not a good match. And I think that's helped us stay really clear with our values and with who we want to work
Absolutely.
With.
I always say if the number doesn't make you feel slightly uncomfortable, you're probably not asking for enough money. And you have to price yourself based on the level of transformation that you are providing to the client, whether that is a district, whether that is a person. You know, you have to realize like you're doing life-changing work, not only for this educator, but also for all of the people that they're going to impact. And there should be a substantial cost to doing that work, because otherwise, you know, you just have a hobby. And I know, you know, part of the struggle with especially pricing yourself and putting that out there is the mindset work that we have to go through in order to really own our value and our worth, especially as women of color. What is that mindset work to look like for you?
I mean, what you said earlier is so true. It's like, I didn't think that starting a business was going to be a whole like process on my own self, you know, growth. But it was. It's just, it took a lot of coaching, to be quite honest. It took a lot of coaching. Even moments where in the beginning, I would get mad at Kat because I'm like, you don't understand. Like, we work in an education system. And it's like, but it all like makes sense now. And so it was just a lot of like pushing through those ideas that I had in my head. And also even when you said earlier about the fact that like, yeah, I mean, I have all these degrees. Like, I am worthy of that amount. You know, I have a lot of experience, not only personal experience, but educational experience that I can go back to and say, this is why this might work. And so it just took a lot of having other people working with me, Christina and I pushing each other in that way too. And also just reminding myself, like, we're needed. That thought of like, they need us. There are so many schools that need us and where there's not enough of us. So how are we going to be able to like, make it worth our time and their time to contract with us. So it takes a lot of mindset work and reminding, you know, yourself of your worth, your expertise, and what is needed out there. Because if I like, and that's the thing, like it's hard. And there's times where it's like really hard to convince myself. But then I'm like, this conversation is going to impact so many students that look like me, that are in the margins, and that need that support. That's what matters. And so it's like consistently reminding myself of
that. Absolutely. It is an ongoing process of challenging all of the different elements of mental health and of your just scarcity mindset. All that stuff is going to constantly confront you. I like to remind people it's not actually going to go away. It's just going to morph into different versions. Because when you hit your first like 10K month, you're going to be like, well, I don't know how the fuck I did that. That's never going to happen again. You know, when you hit your first six-figure year, you're going to be like, well, that's never going to happen again. And it's just almost like you have to convince your brain time and time again that the results that you've gotten are not accidental. They are intentional. They are based on actual like work that you've done. You have figured out something that you need to just write down probably and keep doing that shit so that you can give yourself the evidence that you need to realize that what you've created is not an accident. It's not luck. It's actually, you got to own what you've built because you did it. So can you tell me about that moment when you first realized like, oh shit, like we're actually going to be successful at this?
Well, you know, to be quite honest, it was when I had to ask our bank, our business bank, to increase our deposit amount because the check was larger than their allowed deposit amount.
Do you want to share that number?
It was 80,000.
Okay. So you got $80,000 for a single contract?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Okay. Goosebumps. All right. Tell me more.
It was that. And it was like that moment of like, wait, I'm calling a business bank to be like, can you increase this? Because I need to deposit a check for $80,000. And then be like, oh, yeah, we could do that. And like how it was so quick on their end that it was like no big deal. But for me, I'm like, wow, this is crazy. And to like do work that we're really excited about. And for people not to even like bat an eye around like, yeah, we need this. Here you go. And it was just like that moment where I'm like, you know, we could do this. And even then I was like, I think we didn't even charge enough. But, you know, everything is a learning process. And like we've had lots of different products that we still kind of have. Like we wrote a book. We have a planner. We have digital downloads. But, you know, it's just all just trying to see what people can access, because that's the other thing. Not every district is going to write out a check for 80,000, but there are different ways that school educational leaders can access the work that we do. It's just in a different format. And so that's been important to us too, but really focusing in on, you know, the bigger contracts, because that's what allows us to keep selling those things at a lower cost.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up, because one of the things that I think is crucial, especially when you want to really like build a business that is sustainable long-term, it's not being entirely dependent on a single way to make money. The same way that you don't want to be reliant on a single paycheck, just because you just never know. As a business, I think it's so important to, like you said, provide those levels of accessibility, because there's just not going to be every client that can put out five figures, you know, multiply five figures to work with you guys. And so having that access in different price points really allows you to serve more without necessarily having to give more of yourself. Because that's the thing too. We don't want to create a bunch of different offers that still require you to show up and pour everything in. Like with a book, that's up to that person to read. With a course, it's up to that person to watch or whatever. And but it still allows folks to enter your ecosystem in the way that they can. So I love that approach. Tell me what the biggest obstacle has been for you in this journey, right? Because it's not all fun and games.
It's along the lines of like that mindset. One of the biggest obstacles is mindset. And I say that even before time, because time was obviously an obstacle, but I think the mindset is what also limits your time, because then you think that you can't accomplish anything in the short amount that you have. So it's really just been about convincing myself or continuing to do that work, like especially when things get hard. And not just hard with the business, but life is life, you know? Like I got a kid, they're young, and there's lots of things that come with raising a toddler. I'm married, and so like there's things that come up too in marriage and living in California. It's not cheap, and so there's lots of conversations around what is worth our time and what should we be working on or spending money on. And so I really think that it goes back to the mindset of like there was moments where I'm like, ugh, we're not getting any traction, or is this really going to work out? It's a lot to do on top of the 9 to 5. It starts wearing down on you. And so it was like moments of like, maybe I should give this up. Maybe it's just too much. But it was like working through kind of those thoughts and like a lot of the work that the coaches have told us, thanks to Kat and Deidre again, it's like reminding yourself why you're doing this. And what's it for? What is the mission and vision of our business? And that's something that we ground ourselves in a lot and review it a lot, because that's what we want our school leaders to do. So we, you know, definitely walk the walk. And so we're not here to say that it's easy. It's not easy, you know, working in schools. And so with everything, I think it has to do a lot with that mindset and that support. And like identifying what those support systems are so that you can either lean on them when you need to, or say, you know, not right now, not yet, I got this. And like still have those people around you, because they're going to help you also point out some of those mindset flaws, but also kind of uplift the mindset that you need to have and remind you of all of the things you've accomplished. So I think that's the biggest barrier, to be quite honest with you. It's not even... Yeah, there's like little things with business. Like I had no idea how to like, I guess, like keep track of certain expenses. And I had no idea how big that tax bill was going to be. And, you know, like figuring out a client management system. Like there's so many things that I picked up by being, you know, business owner that I'm like, man, like now I have even more skills. So that's hard. And that's been a barrier, but that's not the biggest barrier, I would say.
Absolutely. So I think, you know, one of the things that I find stops a lot of people from pursuing entrepreneurship is this idea of like, I don't have the time, and you work and you are building this business. So tell us a little bit about your time management strategies and how do you prevent yourself from burning out?
It all depends. Like I find that like you have to kind of shift as your body shifts, you know, like as you age, things change, you know, I'm in my 40s. And so like, for me, it's like, I'm not able to stay up as late as I used to. It totally messes me up. So if I know that, then really trying to pick what are the essential things that have to get done? What has the biggest impact? So there might not be as pretty as graphics as I want on like a proposal or a social media posting. And that's all because I'm like, that's not essential. It's the message. So what's going to get that out there? It's also kind of helped on that decision fatigue, because like when you have less time, you're just like, I got to get this out there. So like, you know, I think of like this sticker from the Passion Planner from their founder. It's like, and this is said in so many different ways, but it's like, progress, like not perfection. Like I'm not trying, like I think I was always trying to seek the perfection and was quite a bit of a perfectionist. But now realizing, like, especially with so many demands on time, it's about progress and accepting that. So it goes hand in hand with the mindset of saying, like, this may not look like this perfect polished thing to me, but it might to someone else. And at least it's getting out there and I'm making progress towards the goals that I have. And depending on your situation, before I used to wake up super early and get work done before my kid woke up. And that was when I was able to. Those were pandemic times when we were home all the time. So it made sense that I could do 2-3 hours in the morning and then have the rest of the day. Now I fit it in like after bedtime for like an hour and get as much as I can done. Sometimes it doesn't and it waits till the weekend. As long as, again, like I know what's essential, that's really kind of how I manage things. And also, it kind of helps that my 9-to-5 is connected to like the business. And so a lot of my content will come from like the day-to-day stuff that I have going on, as any educator would, but it keeps me relevant. And so I'm able to like bring some of those things in and put it into different packages or different, you know, assets, I guess, to like put it out there to our community of educational leaders. So I don't know, like some people work well with like 15 minutes at a time. Some people don't. And so take those 15 minutes to do absolutely nothing to recharge when you do have an hour. I think it's identifying what works for you. And I think that's what's helped me is to let go of the guilt and say like, this is what works for me. And I can get this much in and it's going to look this way. It's not crappy because I don't settle for crappy, but it's going to be good enough. And it also takes a lot of therapy and it takes a lot of like support, like I said, and like really trying to dig through and like, what is the actual goal and not what is like all the fluff, like, which is why I connected with you so well. It's like, what is the thing, you know, let's
absolutely.
Do it.
I always like to call them those high return on investment activities. You need to identify what those things are, what is going to bring money to your bottom line, what is going to help you accomplish the next business goal, all of this other bullshit. You either got to outsource it to a software, to a person, or just take it off the list because it doesn't fucking matter. It's not doing anything for you, but exhausting you. What's next? What are you hoping to accomplish in the next, like, let's say 12 to 24 months? What's next?
You know, it's really staying true to what we stand for. And that has, you know, especially now has been tested a lot. You know, we're very much embedded in social justice issues and have been doing a lot of work on, you know, privately within the genocide that's happening in Palestine. So for us, like we've really had to kind of navigate what this means for us as educators and as business owners when it comes to running a business and taking the time to also address some of the injustices that are happening out in the world. And so we're okay with slowing some things down if we need to really stay true to our values and support those that we work with and also support activists and things that are different organizations that are doing the work that we can't always do. And so that might mean like slowing down just a little bit, but really sticking to what we're about. Like, so the coaching of the school leaders, working with the educators that want our messaging, that want our leadership, you know, really giving more attention to the lower ticket items just for now so that people know how to access it because people want to hear from us and they want to work with us, but we may not have the same bandwidth to take on more clients. And so paying more attention to that. Christina and I are also doing more presentations. We're going out and going to different conferences with educators and presenting on these things so that those who don't listen to our podcast can still hear what we're doing to a whole new, so expanding our audience really and getting out there through different professional organizations so that we can build a bigger community. I think this year, the next 12, 24 months is really, again, building an even bigger community, a bigger network, because we're noticing more and more how educators feel burnt out, feel silenced, especially during this time. And we want to provide a space for them to really explore that voice and feel like they have the power behind them to share that and to stand up for the students that need that and for the causes that need it. So it's going to look a little bit different, to be quite honest with you, but we're excited for it because that's what we need to do right now. And that's the beauty of like being very true and authentic to our values.
I love that. And, you know, it's you never really think about like, how folks, especially like in your profession, have to navigate all the shit that's going on in the world and then be almost that guide to kids to like, how do we deal with this? How do we navigate this? I mean, we saw that with like the George Floyd murder. We're seeing that now with the Palestine and Israel conflict. It's like, how do we create citizens who are aware and who are empowered to ask the questions and to question the systems? And I feel like our educators are really the front line of that conversation. So I think the work that you're doing is so incredible. It's so inspiring to see like all of the different businesses that come out of my program. Like I never realized just like how many different worlds we could impact with this information. And so I want to know from you, for somebody who's considering signing up for this program, whether it's a side hustle course, I know you've taken the blog course as well. Like, what would you say to them to kind of get them off the fence?
Honestly, there should be no question because I still learn from it. What was it, like 2021? I feel like I'm still learning from it. Not just the content that you continue to put out there because, you know, it's helpful to go get a refresh, but then you add things to it. So it's also great to like go back and be like, oh yeah, let me see what she has to say about this now. So it's that I keep learning from it, but it's not just the content. It's also learning from others that are in the program and what you see, you know, being shared in the Facebook groups or any of the platforms that you've put out there for us to communicate with each other. I've learned from them. I learned from their journeys as well. I mean, Charlie, I learned from their journey just from seeing everything that they post and where they started to where they're at now. Like, it's just so many of the students from the first cohort and even from the following cohorts, I'm still like really learning from. And I feel like there's more of a community for me too, where I feel less alone as a business owner and feel like, because again, I don't have family like that I can always talk to about this. And so it creates not just you learning the content and feeling more confident and all of the little layers that it takes to be a business owner or to even build a blog. It also creates that network for you where it's like, I know you could put out a question out there and regardless of the field or their niche, it's like it all applies. There's so much I could take away from what Charlie puts out there and vice versa. And so I think like if anyone's questioning whether or not like it shouldn't be a question, you're going to continue to learn from it years and years on end. And not only are you going to take away what you could read and watch and hear, you're going to also see different journeys and see like, oh, that's cool that they did it that way. Should I do that? You kind of start thinking differently because even if they're not in education, there's a lot that can apply. So I just think that you learn so much, not just from, you know, everything you share, but also just again, like your modeling does a lot of it. Like you are showing us how it can be done. You're teaching us how it can be done. And you're setting up a system where you can continue to learn from others how it's done.
Yeah. That representation is so important to see like people who are in the same level of your journey and especially like people of color, because entrepreneurship can be lonely as hell, especially if you have the type of business model that you are necessarily working from home most of the time or you're doing virtual events and things like that. And yeah, your family's not going to get it. Your friends are not going to get it. You're not going to be able to like ask them the questions about like, you know, how do I navigate this or how do I start doing this or how do you guys tackle this? And so I think that community is absolutely the most important aspect of the work that I do. I do it with the podcast. I do it with my courses. And I feel like even something as simple as like my own physical health, like I know I'm built to like the type of person that needs to go to a group fitness class to get exercise. I can't do it alone because I'm just not going to hold myself accountable. And this is why we hire personal trainers. This is why we hire coaches. This is why we sign up for programs. You just got to keep shit real with yourself. Like if you know you're the type of person that just needs support of a community, that you need cheerleaders, you need people that are going to like rally behind you, who are going to encourage you when you're feeling down, when you feel like quitting, like sign up for my program because that's what we fucking do here. It's just like, you don't have to do this alone. And I think especially like, again, as first gen women of color, we are so programmed to not ask for help. We got to do shit alone because we saw our abuelas and our moms and our titis. Everybody was just like, no, it's fine. I got it. I don't need nobody. We do need each other because we are stronger together. And that's how we move forward collectively. So Eileen, I just want you to know, you are a shining star, an example of what it is to like really walk the walk, talk the talk, do all the things. I want folks to find out more about you, the work that you're doing, your podcast. Tell us everything.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Jenny, thank you. Honestly, like I give you so much credit. I would not be where I'm at if it weren't for you and your program and your podcast. Like, quite honestly, like, thank you so much for everything. And you can listen to our podcast. It's called Empowered Educational Conversations with Aline and Christina. And our main Instagram page is at Aline and Christina. So E-L-I-N and Christina. That's where, you know, our business is posting. I also post on Hablando Wellness, and that's really coming from the blog and exploring wellness as it is, because we talked a little bit about burnout, but there's a lot about our wellness world. So that's another place where I kind of explore those things. But primarily everything educator is Aline and Christina. So hopefully you'll join our community.
Absolutely. There. And we will have everything linked in the episode show notes. Again, Aline, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Janine.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you are ready to take your dinero to the next level, sign up for our free 14-page guide, The Financially Lit Latina, the ultimate blueprint for becoming poderosa with your dinero. This 14-page guide includes our best tips on money mindset, budgeting, debt repayment, career, investing, financial independence, side hustles, and more. And you can get it completely free. So to get your copy of The Financially Lit Latina, just head over to yoquierodineropodcast.com/start and start transforming your dinero story today. Until next time, stay empowered, stay inspired, and stay poderosa. On the Yo Quiero Dinero podcast and associated entities, all information provided is for general information purposes only and does not constitute accounting, legal, tax, or other professional advice. Listeners should not act upon the content or information found here without first seeking appropriate advice from an accountant, financial planner, lawyer, or other professional. We assume no responsibility for information contained on this podcast and associated entities and disclaim all liability with respect to such information, including but not limited to any liability for errors, inaccuracies, omissions, or misleading or defamatory statements. Usage of this podcast and associated contents constitutes an explicit understanding and acceptance of the terms of this disclaimer.